Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
A year ago last June, Tom Porcello and his son set out on what has become a popular rite of spring, or summer, or even fall. Together they attended Major League Baseball games in Cleveland, Baltimore, Chicago, and Arlington, Texas, among other venues. One thing Tom Porcello discovered along the way was that each ballpark had its own distinctive sounds, and that's what he's here to talk about today. Tom Porcello, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you.
This trip to various ballparks began as a father-son bonding opportunity, as I understand it, and I assume that it worked on that level?
Very well on that level, yes.
At what point did it start evolving into something else, and what was that something else?
Almost from the beginning, a little bit, in the sense that I had assumed that we would put together some iPhoto slideshow, something like that, at the end of the trip of all the pictures we were taking of the ballparks. And I had this idea that rather than finding the right song to play with them, I would want to be able to mix in, oh, wouldn't it be great to have the actual sounds from the various ballparks that we've been at as what we're listening to as we look at the slides. So I had taken along a stereo microphone and a mini disc recorder and was recording in very random ways. And as I was listening to them a little bit, as we would be driving from one place to the next, I began to realize, you know, the sonic experience of being at these various stadiums was really quite different from one place to the next. And I began to think about maybe a little bit more systematically recording so that I could try to pick up on what those differences in fact actually
were. Do some comparisons and some contrasting. The father-son connection is a great one. I have no problem with fathers and sons going to baseball games, obviously, but you were bringing a level of expertise to this that most fathers don't. You were looking at this from a professional perspective as well, right from the outset.
Yes, my training is in both linguistic anthropology and ethnomusicology, and these are both fields that spend a great deal of time thinking about the way that auditory and acoustic phenomena, whether it's language or whether it's music, relate to social and cultural life.
Several of the teams you visited had theme songs that were woven right into the introduction of the starting lineups. Shall we listen to the way the Cleveland Indians did it?
And now, here's the starting lineup for your Cleveland Indians.
Without the ball game in front of me, I feel as if I'm listening to the soundtrack of a baseball movie. Do you suppose that that's the effect that people in Cleveland had in mind?
I think it might be. I mean, what they're trying to do, I think, at the stadium is to create an experience that the entire crowd begins to share. And it's an experience about the Cleveland Indians, the reason for being in the ballpark, the way that the Indians are part of the community of Cleveland. And I think that that soundtrack, the Foo Fighters, it's times like these, we learn to live again. The time is in the ballpark, and the we is the crowd at Jacobs Field.
We're living again.
That's right.
Through the Cleveland
exactly.
Indians. At one of Major League Baseball's two oldest parks, you found the traditional organ was still in use, or at least the organ music. I don't know if it was coming from a traditional organ. Shall we allow ourselves to be transported to Wrigley Field for a few moments? Maybe it's because I attended my first Major League game in 1956, but I like that approach. What about you?
I do, too. One of the things that really struck me at Wrigley Field, and I think the same thing, of course, happens at Fenway Park, is that the announcer gets into a dialogue with the organ player around the way that they sort of intone the voices of the players, and then the organist provides a little musical flourish, and the crowd joins in. So it becomes a very participatory, almost a performance on the part of the organist and the announcer and even the crowd that's there.
But we have come to a time when it's an experience that we're likely to associate with minor league hockey games rather than Major League Baseball games these days, isn't it?
I think it is. And in fact, one of the things that I hope to pay a little bit more attention to in the future as I go out and see more baseball games are differences between minor league baseball stadiums and Major League Baseball stadiums in how they handle this.
You know enough about baseball and which teams are good and which teams are not so good so that you probably weren't surprised by what you saw on the field too often. Were you surprised by what you heard in the ballparks often?
I was surprised by a very simple thing, which is how different the ballpark sounded from each other. And I suspect the reason that I was surprised by that is that as you listen to broadcasts of baseball games, whether it's on radio or whether it's on television, very seldom do those parks sound different from each other because of the way that they're mixed for broadcasts.
All right, I'm going to let you tell us about what you encountered when you went to a game in Arlington, Texas, where I guess one anthem was deemed one anthem too few. Did you know you were going to hear the, I guess that's the Texas state anthem when you went to the ballpark?
I had no idea, although in retrospect, perhaps I should have expected it. What with it being the state of Texas, but also we saw a number of interleague games during the course of the trip because of the timing when we took it. And This was the Rangers and the Astros, and perhaps they don't do this at every Rangers game.
You did hear the national anthem in Texas as well, of course, and perhaps we can listen to a little bit of that, and then let's let our listeners guess what they're hearing as that anthem ends. Now, that wasn't a championship game or anything because the Rangers haven't been in any championships recently. Were you surprised at the various patriotic symbols, some of them ear-splitting flyovers like that one at the ballpark at Arlington?
Well, I was surprised, and again, perhaps in retrospect, I think maybe one needs to remember the Rangers were at one point owned by the current president of the United States. I think that baseball has a particular relationship to American patriotism and American identity that makes us see those patriotic symbols in a lot of ballparks, or at least makes a lot of ballparks very conscious about representing a certain idea of Americanness. And it's an Americanness that has to do with values that we supposedly all share, values that are deeply rooted in our past. And I think that visually we do see a lot of those symbols. One of the things that I've found very interesting in traveling from stadium to stadium is that they look much more similar to each other than they sound similar to each other. And I think you hear those sonic differences in two very obvious places, one of which is the music that is chosen to be played between innings very often speaks to the musical taste that you associate with that particular part of the country.
You've received a number of grants to visit more ballparks in this upcoming season and continue your studies. Do you hope to soon be able to draw some anthropological conclusions regarding the way sounds are changing in ballparks?
I do. One of the things that I'm very interested in is the way that the composition of Major League Baseball has been changing in recent years. Major League Baseball was, for a long time, very much a white American sport and an African American sport. In recent years, it, of course, has become much more a Latino sport. And because baseball has this particular relationship to American nostalgia and American identity, and because this change is happening at a moment where there is a lot of nervousness in the United States about immigration, I find this to be a very interesting tension between what's happening in baseball and what's happening in larger discourses about the United States and its immigrant policies right now.
So this is an academic pursuit. I have great admiration for you. I taught for many years and never figured out how to get funded to go to baseball games. I think it's pretty good.
Well, thank you.
Tom Porcello is an associate professor of anthropology at Vassar College. He's currently fooling the head of his department into thinking that going to baseball games constitutes anthropological research and fooling a lot of people who fund grants as well. I guess good on him, say I. Tom, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks, Bill. Don't let them in on my secret.
Our exploration into the anthropological significance of the sounds of various ballparks will be featured on Saturday's show. We'll also be reviewing the significance of some much less pleasant baseball-related sounds, the dueling contentions of Roger Clemens and Brian McNamee before the sometimes attentive and intermittently present members of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform. We'll have a story about whether the shack-reinforced suns are likely to rise in Phoenix, and we'll have an absolute lock of a prediction regarding the winner of Sunday's NASCAR race in Daytona. We'll also have a story about junior hockey in Ohio and a commentary from a guy who describes himself as an old broken-down hockey player. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the show at onlyagame.org.